Hi, baby.
Hi.
I'm so happy that we could do this today.
I know.
I'm going to intro myself and then you want to go?
Sounds great.
Right. My name is Leah Blooms. My pronouns are he, they, she. And I am a mentor to Pro Dom and a sex educator.
I'm Brandolyn. My pronouns are she, her. And I'm just excited to be here today. We've been talking about this for a while. And excited to talk with people who are new to kink, maybe, or maybe have been doing it a while and are just looking for maybe a practical application or more personal look at kind of how it plays out in somebody's life.
One of the things that we've been talking about together is how do we help bring people in who are new to kink? How do we help them understand what kink is about so it's not so intimidating? How do we help normalize it for people who think there may be something wrong with them? We have a lot of goals, and the Patreon is a good way for us to hold workshops and do these podcasts and other kinds of introductions. So we've been talking about it for months, mm-hmm. and I'm super happy that we finally get to do the first one.
Absolutely.
I've got a little list here of the things that we decided we're going to try to cover today. I hope we can get to all of them. But the first one on the list is, why do we even want to do this podcast? I mean, I just named a couple of things, but both of us come to this kind of passionate. Do you want to share why do you care?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think that despite there being so much information out there, I mean, there's so many podcasts, there's so many YouTube videos. I think that people are still hungry. When people reach out to us, they're still hungry for that practical application. How does this actually work in your everyday life? And that's one of the reasons I'm excited to do the podcast with you, is to help people understand, what does it actually look like day to day? Not how do I do one scene, not the theory of SM, but how does it show up in your life? Mm-hmm. What are the pitfalls? What does it really look like? And I'm excited to talk about that.
It's such a wide playground. I mean, there's room for everybody in it. So we're really talking about what we bring mm-hmm. from our two areas. And the reason that I'm really excited about this is I have a lot of clients that I've worked with, both mentoring and in the pro dom side, that really don't understand why they're attracted to kink, why kink seems to be working for them, who they can talk to about it, how to do it safely. And creating their owner's manual kind of becomes the focus of mm-hmm. some of the work that we do together. So I thought this would be a great way to get that information out to more people widely.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you and I come at it from two different places, that we have very different backgrounds. We came into it very differently. There are still different interests that we hold in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's powerful for people to see.
Well, that's a great intro into what I want to ask you next, which is, will you share kind of how you came into kink?
Yeah. I came into kink in the early 90s. I was the old age of 21, something like that, very elderly. And, you know, it was just when the internet was really coming into normal use. So, you know, you didn't have the websites that you have now, but you had chat rooms. You had the ability to talk with people in real time, which for people, especially young people now, must sound so strange. But then it was so exciting. Everything was brand new. Everything felt just alive in a different way. And I got onto an AOL, America Online chat room, where I got to know a room called F4F Dungeon. Shout out to anybody who actually remembers that room. And through
which
that-
means female or femme.
It was female for female.
Female for female, just not, for people who don't know.
Those in the back. Yes. So it definitely was not just femme, but it was my first opportunity to talk with people who were interested in some of the things that I was interested in. You know, I think a lot of people, I was introduced to BDSM initially through sex or sexual partners or lovers, relationships, and then it kind of took on an interest life of its own. And I got more and more into it and becoming a part of this chat room. And then having my first invitation to come and take part, you know, in real life, in outside of a relationship is what happened with me. And so I was invited to spend a weekend in New York. I had just broken up with someone and I was brokenhearted and I wanted to pick me up. And they said, we have just the thing. And they said, would you like to play with somebody who's really great? And I said, sure. And, you know, I had done some limited play. I knew that I was a bit of a masochist. I knew that I liked power dynamics. I knew that I didn't shy away from what I would call a reserved exhibitionism. And so they said, we're having a gathering at this club called Hellfire. There's this wonderful mistress that you would love to play with. Here's her name. I had never been to New York City before. It was my first weekend there. I show up bright-eyed, 21 years old, and I show up at this club and I say, can you tell me where so-and-so is? And they said, oh yeah, it's that one over there. And it was this blonde woman in a black leather cat suit getting oiled up by three submissives. And, you know, I was wide-eyed. And, you know, I wasn't from the country, but it was certainly more than I had experienced before. And it was super fun and exciting. And she and I had what I now know as a short conversation about what I was looking for, what I was interested in. And then she strung me up in the club and proceeded to beat the shit out of me. And it was super fun.
I find this so fascinating, coming from this, where I came from, that you could walk in kind of open to whatever, like you kind of have an idea, but you really don't have any idea. And then like all the possible ways that could go wrong for people, but it all going right. And you have this experience that is meaningful and fun. And then you leave not only intact, but like, I would like to do this again sometime. Oh.
I was all lit up.
That was amazing.
You know, it was such an interesting, you and I were speaking about this earlier today, and because I'm not somebody who walks into a room and wants to be the life of the party. I'm not somebody that wants to call a lot of attention myself. I don't walk into a room and hold court in the same way that a number of people that we've run into in the past do. Mm-hmm. And love and feel good in that space. I don't. But I don't mind being the center of attention. And so I think that's partially why that event worked for me, is it allowed me to be exactly who I am. So I'm tied up, for God's sake. I'm not going anywhere. A little bit of an exhibitionism, meaning most of my clothes were off. But I got to receive so much from the top that I was playing with. And she was so skilled and so fun and so sexy. And it felt like an experience between the two of us, mm-hmm. not an experience with a room full of 100 people that are watching. It was really just her and I, and I was with her in that moment. And I think that that's an element of SM that I love and crave, that intimacy, that bond that is mm-hmm. created. And yeah, I think everybody else just fell away from me.
I think that particular top had the reputation of being fantastic with a single tail.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And so I'm curious, when you first felt the pain level, which no one can explain what it's going to feel like. They can tell you it's going to sting or be thuddy or, mm-hmm. you know, crack or whatever. But I'm curious, do you remember being in your body and feeling that?
I do. It wasn't what I expected. I think I expected something worse. It's very fast. It's very stingy, hot, almost like a fire feeling. Mm-hmm. Having now been in a fire since then, I can tell you it's more fun, but it doesn't last. I think that's the piece for me that makes single tails so fun, is it's a quick burn and you feel it in the moment. You think it's bad and then it gets bad and then it's gone. And then you're doing it again. And it's a quick, rapid succession of sensation. Uh-huh. And I think that there's also, you know, as much as I don't mind being the center of attention, I think I also don't mind showing off a little. Mm-hmm. And so to be the bottom that can, you know, take it, so to speak, and do it well and perform in that way felt really, really good.
I know so many bottoms who would not enjoy, who don't enjoy single tail because of the varied nature of when the crack's going to come. Yeah. And look at you. You're so excited about it.
Yeah.
Like, some people really like the methodical, knowing when to count mm-hmm. on, you know, to incorporate the pain into the process, but you just light up. That's true. Really fun. I have another question. So when you left that night, I think a lot of people who wouldn't have known what to expect would have thought, okay, I survived, but never again. Like, that was amazing, but no. What were you thinking that was like, I need more of this, or I want more of this?
It was, what's your number? How do I find you again? when are we going to play again? would you like to come to pizza with us? We had the most fantastic pizza after that scene. Yeah, it was like a wonderful.
You were energized.
Oh, it was like a wonderful first date. It was that kind of energy where you can't wait to see that person again. And you're so excited and you're so pumped up. And you, even if you've been awake for 36 hours, you are awake. And that's how it felt for me. It was.
Those brain endorphins were just high gear.
All over the place, all over the place. And I think it also, it provided a place for all of the energy, all of the thinking I had been doing, because as much as I hadn't played that heavily before, I had certainly read about it. I had certainly read about it. There's a wonderful book, in fact, we have it on our shelf, about bottoming. And one of the stories is called Signals, and it's about signal whips. And I remember reading that. I lived in DC at the time, and I remember reading it in the back of a cafe. And I mean, I just couldn't put it down. So having the ability to make a fantasy reality and finding that I did love it as much as I expected, and it was fun, and I did get such a rush. It was really gratifying to know that, my mind was on the right track.
Amazing. Yeah, I came to it much differently, as you were about to ask me. And I think one of the fun things about getting to know you early on was that kink was so fun for you. Mm-hmm. And your questions about if we were going to play together incorporated all this fun. and I came from it from this healing perspective. Like, it's all about, trauma, reclamation, processing. And that, like, fun isn't the first thing that I would say about kink for how I came into it. Very useful. I'm very passionate about it. I love it. Healing. But fun came much later. Fun came after I understood a lot of different elements. And so I love you talking about yours just immediately is like, oh my gosh, let's do more of this thing. I went to a dungeon party with a friend, and I went as kind of a lark, kind of like I'll be the side guy going with you.
You're
going to
be the wingman.
I don't want you to go into this dangerous place alone. So let me go with you. And if you've never gone to a dungeon expo before, you walk into what looks like kind of a business front that has blackened out windows or something to protect what's happening on the inside. You sign a bunch of paperwork. You walk through some curtains that are usually black or dark velvet green or red or something very dramatic. And then there's this whole world inside of people who are engaging in activities that you can go and look at and see what you're drawn to, see what's happening that you've never heard of before or you've been curious about, and get a closer look and not have to feel embarrassed or ashamed of yourself, And so I remember walking with my friend through the curtains and realizing that I had no idea what this was. Like, the drama, the lighting, the people, like everything was like, I had never imagined what this was going to be like in real life. That was the first thing I noticed. And then I noticed somebody who was strung up on a St. Andrew's cross with someone who had a bunch of things like whips and floggers and canes and all kinds of tools. And they were inviting people to come up and take turns, whoever felt interested. And I was drawn. I was drawn that direction. And
which part were you drawn to?
I was drawn to wanting to pick up something and try it on this person. And when I left later, I felt very confused. I had to go through this whole thing of like, how could a good person want to hit someone? And why did I feel good in that role? And all of my programming and childhood and religious stuff just, was coming up, and it was very confusing and very hard. And I felt a lot of shame and a lot of guilt. It took me 3 or 4 months to get to the other side of that, of like really researching other people who use kink as a healing art and why it works and what happens in your brain and in your body and everything so I finally get to the other side of that. And then I'm ready. And I'm like, who's going to be my partner in this? And there's nobody. It's a very small community, like people know who's in community, and it's hard to just show up and say, I'm ready to play. And people are like, I don't know you. So that took some while.
Yeah. But I think I took, I was just going to say, I think that's where bottoms have it a tiny bit easier. Mm. If we're learning, there's a lot of people available. And you, I mean, I think the danger is in learning who's safe to play with.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people who are willing to help you learn. As a top coming in new who hasn't played before,
yeah,
much harder for good reason.
And yeah, and I would argue that that's fair, that like, because then I used that next 6 or 7 months to learn everything that I could. And I think that because of who I am, that worked. And I don't think everyone can do that. After having worked with a lot of tops and doms in the last 4 or 5 years, not everyone who comes in and wants to do that without having bottom first is successful. That's mm-hmm. how I would say it. And I think it takes a certain kind of empathy, a certain kind of understanding about emotions and like your own personal work to be able to step into that role. Otherwise you really should, I think, bottom first and let somebody show you how all of that works. Sure. I did it in opposite order.
Mm-hmm. You got there in the end.
Yeah. So interesting. I love both of the ways that we've come in, and I've loved talking to so many clients over the years about how they found it. And it's just such a vast, wide playground, and there really is room for everybody.
What you said about, I know that the reasoning for it is different, but you had said that your family of origin, when you were raised so religious and so conservative, that I think what you said is, I didn't understand how a good person could want to do this thing.
Yeah.
I do think that's common. I do think that's common even for people who perhaps weren't raised as conservative as you were, with a very religious family. I remember the first time I ever had an experience that left marks, and that was pre-New York. That was pre, you know, playing publicly. But I had been with women that were lovers and were into biting, and mm-hmm. left marks literally all over my body. And the next day when I looked in the mirror, I knew it was consensual. I knew I had had a good time. I knew I wouldn't change anything. And yet walking in front of that mirror and being confronted with that physical proof, mm-hmm. it was very disconcerting, because bruises on my body is supposed to be a sign that something is wrong. I've been hurt. Right. And I really had to do some mental gymnastics to understand, wait, how do I feel? Mm-hmm. No, everything is fine. And then of course, you know, I got to loving them, but that took a while.
And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, most people who I've worked with have had that experience. Mm-hmm. Like they don't know what they don't know before they start playing around with kink with other people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes nobody really knows. And so you'll say yes to something and you really don't know what you're saying yes to. So you probably said, yes, I would like biting, but you didn't know the extent of what that would mean.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And how hard they were going to bite. So in the workshop that I used to teach, that I would love to teach again when COVID is over, there's a question that I would ask a volunteer. And that is, do you say yes to me spanking you? And they would say, yes. And I would say, do you know what you just said yes to? And they would say, yeah, I said you could spank me. And I would say, well, how hard? And then I would say, and where? And how many times? And with what? And do you know what you would say if you wanted me to stop? Like, there's all kinds of questions to get to this deeper level of actual consent that they haven't considered. And I think everybody that I know, almost, I think that's fair to say, everybody that I know has had an experience similar to yours where you do something and then you realize, I don't really know what I'm saying yes to. How can I figure this out so it actually doesn't hurt me mm-hmm. if I don't want it to hurt me in that way?
Sure. I'm wondering, you spoke about being raised conservatively or religiously. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that. There's so many people that I see who have come out of religion, sometimes in fun ways. In fact, with a friend that you and I were meeting yesterday, spoke about sometimes ex-Catholics have the most wonderful ritualistic scenes. But what was it like for you coming from a Mormon upbringing into BDSM?
I think, as I have come out in the last 5 years in stages, it's been increasingly more difficult for them to understand me or where I'm at. Like, the further away I get from what they understand and know to be good, the more they just don't understand anything about me. Like, why would I choose any of the things that I'm choosing? Why do I have a partner who is the same quote unquote sex as me? You know, why would I leave my husband, Joe, who treated me so well. Why would I leave the church? Like, there's just so many questions they don't understand. So it has taken some time to kind of negotiate inside of me, how much do I need for my family to understand, like me, think that I'm good, want me in their lives, and less and less. And that's okay. Because I think for a lot of queer people like me, especially ones who come out late in life, it took us a very long time to figure out what was wrong, what was missing, what didn't fit. And then we find it. And I don't really want to try to navigate making this whole other set of people feel good about my choices when I know that they don't understand them anyway. So why not give them the room that they need and give myself the room that I need? And like, we get to choose our friends the same way. We get to choose where we work sometimes for the same reasons. I don't want to choose to be in family with people who I don't feel like even think that I'm a good person. I had a sibling say to me something like, you don't fit into my belief system. You literally don't fit because you can't be who you are doing the things that you're doing and be good. Those things don't go together. So I feel at peace with it. I feel settled with it, which is nice. It's taken me some time to get here. A lot of the people who I work with have the same types of issues with family. And so there's a pattern there. There's a pattern of people who are religious. It's not just me, with people who don't support them and understand them, who probably love them in whatever way that means to them. I don't think feeling sad and wishing that that person would change is necessarily love. I think appreciating them and noting what they do that's great, and, you know, being super glad that they're happy would be an active type of love versus what I think a lot of those families do. But I think they would tell you that they love me for sure. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I noticed coming out of the religious thing with my family, and especially with gender, how there's only one right way to be a boy or a girl or a man or a woman, and I just don't fit in that my whole life. I'm not one of those things. And kind of finding my legs about that and kind of being okay with that, that's when I came into kink. And one of the things that I loved about the whole playground and the people in it is that consent piece. Nobody's doing anything that you're not consenting to. It's been talked about, it's been planned for, and you can pull the plug at any time. And there's something about that for people who have experienced childhood trauma or something significant as an adult, an assault or something, to be able to go back and rewrite that and hold all of the cards and make all of the plans and feel really powerful in that space where it comes specifically to sex, that I think is so powerful for so many people. And learning all of that opened my eyes to power dynamics in general, which is mostly where my client work, my pro-dom work is focused, is the power dynamic aspect. And so people who don't understand will say, you know, I don't even understand what that means. And I'll say, I have a couple in mind, actually. There was a couple who came to me, and the husband, who was a cishet gentleman, did not believe that power dynamics were part of their relationship. And his wife really did. And she was trying to figure out how to help explain what didn't feel good to her. She didn't have words to explain what didn't feel good. So my approach was to say, well, all relationships that you're in do have power dynamics, whether you know it, whether you admit it, whether you are aware of it or not. So for example, you, sir, go to work. And when it comes down to choices about money and bills, you have the final say. Like, she's told me that she can't purchase things without your approval. So you are in top space around money and finances. And that is the role that you've decided on without her consent.
I was going to say, was this agreed to?
No, but he hadn't seen it that way. He just thought, well, I earned the money, so I should get to make the choices, right? And then it was her turn. And I was like, you have two children at home. And you have the final say with all of the child rearing. He can't tell you anything, but you will tell him how he doesn't get to reprimand them or punish them or discipline them in any way. It's all on you. And so I could see them both like thinking, like, we're both doing a power dynamic that we weren't aware of. So that's true in every relationship. Like every relationship we have, those power dynamics are happening. And so somebody who keeps getting in relationships with people, dating the same person over and over again, they're asking for and getting a power dynamic. Is it the one that you want? Or do you want to think about a different way to be? And so I look back on being raised the way that I was and how indoctrinated I was with how this is how women are supposed to be and look, and this is how the men do it, and kind of not wanting any of it. Like, I want to forge my own way. And yet what?
I was going to say, and yet we know that some of that is still with you. The idea of certain roles.
I cannot get out from the binary, even though I try my very best. It's been really interesting to work with you on some of those things. So those who don't know, I'm new to bottoming. I'm new to being a switch since I've known Brandlin. And it's been a very healing experience coming from that direction also. It was something that I didn't realize that I needed, wanted, or could do, frankly. Like I didn't think that I could do it. But in the course of doing it, I've discovered how binary thought I am. I equate all of these traits with top, bottom, masculine, feminine, and there's definitely a line, and I attribute it back to how I was raised. I was just swimming in that water always.
Well, and I think that's why it was interesting to you is, I assume, is that when we met, I'm definitely femme. I don't ever present anything different, and yet was willing, eager to assume a top space with you.
Yeah.
So it must have pushed all kinds of buttons for you of, what is happening here? Why do I feel this way? What is this person doing? And who is this person?
I'm thinking of that polo in particular.
Where you said, stop.
You got to stop what you're doing because I make a living doing this and you're putting me someplace that I don't really understand. But I was so drawn to it. I really wanted more of whatever that was. Mm-hmm. You were very patient with me.
I was eager.
So we do, you know, for whoever's listening, we do use kink in our relationship. And some websites like FetLife or whatever will say, do you live the lifestyle as much as you can or 24/7 or whatever? I don't either. But sometimes you'll see someone's checked 24/7 and you think that must mean that half the time they're walking around in chains or like, I mean, I don't know. And maybe they do. Good for them if they love that kink. But that's not what we mean in our relationship.
No, and yet I would probably, if I had to choose, I would probably say we live at 24/7. There are certain things that we do with and for each other that don't go away, but they're woven so easily into our everyday life that not only do we not think about it, I don't mean that we aren't cognizant of it, we think about it and it's meaningful, but it is simply what we do. I make you coffee every morning. Mm-hmm. That's a service that I provide to you. That feels wonderful for me. When you talk about people being in power dynamics that they don't understand, gosh, I go back to, you know, all of my extended family, and that is very binary. It's very common for the women in those marriages to assume what they consider a submissive role, and that's supposed to be good in the eyes of God, etc. Mm-hmm. Some of them really chafe at that role and really have to force themselves into a box to fit it. Some people love it because it comes naturally to them. Service bottoming is something that comes naturally to me that I adore. I love. It's one of the ways that I show love to people. It's one of the ways that I show it to you. Mm-hmm. And so there are several things that are built into our daily ritual that are services that I provide that probably people, quote unquote, on the outside might not even recognize.
True. And you make the best coffee that I've ever had. You surprise me every day with something new. And I post it to Instagram and people comment. They want to know how do you make so many beautiful coffees? Magic. Yeah, it is magic. You're magic. So there's different ways that kink shows up in different people's lives, different relationships. We're exploring a third person who could come in and do kink play with us. There's people who have different kinds of relationships with different kinds of kink, and you work those things into relationship. There's no right way. There's no wrong way. It's, does everyone in the relationship want that, agree to that, know what's happening to the degree that is important to them? And I think over the course of relationships, things change. And sometimes you're more open to things. Sometimes those fit needs and sometimes they don't. So if you have good communication, you can kind of figure out what kind of kink, what kind of style of kink, and how often and with who works for you and your relationships.
Yeah, I think so many people are, I think that's one of the biggest misunderstandings about kink that there is just how important communication is and how important it is to talk about what your needs are and what your wants are. And also what a shame it is when you don't, because if you want it, I guarantee you out there, there's somebody that wants to give it to you, no matter what it is. And so I think that it's a shame when people, when we meet others and we think, oh, I need to like what they like, or if I'm not into, you know, X and Y, they're not going to want to play with me. It's so important to be honest and upfront and to know yourself enough to be able to say, I like this and I don't like this. There are a ton of things I don't like, which is funny because when people used to watch me play as a bottom, I think they assumed because I was so good, quote unquote, good at what I was doing, I must be good at everything. No, that's not true. You're never going to come out with me with a needle. I don't do needle play. There's a lot of things I'll say no to. And it's so important that you know what that is. And that's one of the reasons I love the kink playlist that you started, is because it allows people to go through kind of systematically and think, do I want to be in bondage? How do I feel about a takedown scene? What do I think about medical play? And try that on even theoretically and be able to say kind of in the privacy of their own home, yes or no. And that can facilitate a great discussion communication-wise.
Yeah, that kink playlist has, I think, come in really handy. That's one of the first things I'll do with all of my clients who are there for sex, gender, intimacy, because people don't know themselves. And if they've been raised in our current world where, you know, there's the binary and here's what it means when you date, and now you're supposed to be engaged, and now you're supposed to get married, and you already said yes to sex, so that's intercourse between the two of you forever. It's like we're just conditioned to think that there's all these rules that have been set up and we never think about them. So asking yourself all these questions, what do I like? How do I like it? With whom? How often? And I get to be in charge of everything is a real game changer for people. We can make that available too. Maybe I can post that link.
I think the shades of that are so important. When you were talking about doing your workshop with the, you know, have what have you consented to with spanking, that idea of how much do I want? I think the playlist lends itself really nicely to have that conversation. You like hair pulling, how hard? What does that mean? Yeah. Can I drag you by it?
Yeah.
You know, having that kind of level of discussion with somebody is super important.
Well, and asking what is the goal of your kink? So are you coming in just for fun, like like you did, or are you coming in for a healing experience? Because if that's true, then you want to make sure that you activate your parasympathetic nervous system at some point, and the aftercare is going to be a really important thing for you. Where if you're just coming in for fun, like you did, you don't require aftercare in the same way at all.
It's
you want to go party.
That was one of the things, we can probably find it in an old polo between us, but you were asking about aftercare. I had to go, I'm not sure what that means. I knew the idea. But
for
me,
you, yeah.
And I really still don't. There are things I love. There are a lot of things I love, but it's all stuff I would love at any time of the day or night. So, you know, more is better. But I come out of kink so energized and excited and full. I'm ready to go have a new experience. Let's go have an adventure. Let's, you know, let's hit the road. Let's go see six friends for brunch. It's not a quiet, soothing.
Like, and when I'm done with the bottom, they should not drive a car.
No.
They should, they should not operate heavy machinery. They should rehydrate and have a snack and a snuggle. So it's, you have to think about all of those different kinds of ways to have kink. And the next question that I usually get is, well, how do I find somebody who's going to you know, where are the partners? How do I find the partners? What do you think? What advice would you give?
Mm-hmm. I think I always start with people that I know. When I think about, I mean, thank God when I played in New York, that first public scene, thank God I knew people who knew people that could refer me to somebody that they trusted. And there's no question she was safe and she was talented. If you just go online and say, hey, I want somebody to do X and Y to me, oh God, you're gonna be setting yourself up for all kinds of things. And not even intentionally, there are a lot of people that are well-intentioned out there that don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I always start with people I know. I think one of the things that's super important that I'm passionate about for bottoms is to understand, what are you asking for? What's involved in the play that you're asking for? Don't just rely on somebody to do this well and to do it. Get to know it yourself. What does safe play look like with a cane? What does safe play look like with a flogger? So that when you feel it and it's unsafe, you know, so that you're not putting yourself in a vulnerable position.
Yeah. And I always suggest that you get to know them outside of kink. If you're looking for a kink partner who's going to hold space for you on a regular basis, why not have coffee with them several times and get to know their temperament a little bit and be able to trust them? I mean, you're basically giving this person access to really hurt you. Why would you do that if you don't really know who right. they are? Right. So,
yeah, no, it's a good point. I think that there are so many things that we can get to know about a person, especially if we get to know them even over a small amount of time. We see them in a number of different places. If you've seen them maybe, you know, in or near or after their workplace, if you've seen them with their friends, if you've seen them alone, mm-hmm. how they treat waitstaff, you know, all kinds of things that will help you get a window into who somebody is. It's helpful.
I was going to say in the communities where you live, you can usually get recommendations, like if you mm-hmm. find the kink community.
Yeah, and I would also say, you know, keep your wits about you too in terms of safety. You know, whenever I am, and this isn't even kink related, but when I'm spending time alone with somebody that I don't know, I mean, I'm lucky to have the family that I do. My mom has their number. Mm-hmm. You know, she has the address of where I'm going. If it's not your mom, maybe it's your best friend, but be safe.
Yeah.
You know, have a check-in set up with somebody and say, hey, I'm going to let you know at 2:00 that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. You don't get that, I need you to check on me.
And I would put a special caution to my family of trauma, if you've had a lot of trauma, to not rush in. Make sure you really know your triggers. Make sure you really know that you've explained what it is that you need, what you're asking for, and what you look like if you've gone into fight flight, and what to do if that does happen, and what you need. Like, really advocate for yourself so you don't get yourself into re-traumatizing through kink.
Yeah. It was one of the things that you pointed out that I really appreciated. We've had many conversations about that first public scene I did, and how you felt hearing about it the first time and knowing the limited conversations I've had walking into that. I think because I'm somebody that knows myself very well, that I felt safe in it. But, you know, I had never, before you mentioned it, I had never really taken into account the vulnerability that came with being the top in that position, who didn't know me very well, who also had people recommending me, but not on a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she really wasn't aware. We were lucky that I didn't come with trauma, but I could have. And you know, that first flick of a single tail could have put me into a space that she may not have been prepared for. And in a public scene like that, mm-hmm. that could be catastrophic. And so it's really helped me understand a little bit more about the vulnerability that comes with being a top. And I think it's easy to get caught into the I'm the one inflicting, so therefore I control the safety. No, you don't. Right. This is a two-way street that happens. And so I think as important as it is as a bottom to get to know people, it is also incredibly important if you're a top to get to understand people across many different areas of their life so that you can have a reasonable expectation of being able to predict their reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get into all of these subjects more in depth later. I mean, that's our hope. But one thing we haven't really talked about is that in the power dynamic of top and bottom, who actually holds the power? Like, you hear all of these, what's that movie? The Gray movie.
Oh, 50 Shades of Gray.
Like, your input that you have your whole life around kink is that the top holds all the cards and just does whatever they want to the bottom, and the bottom gets the shit beat out of them and thanks the top for that or whatever. It's like this really, yeah. And right. So you and I have this ongoing discussion sometimes about who actually is holding the power. And I think the answer is both of the people. Mm-hmm. But the misconception of the top versus bottom is so prevalent that I just want to touch on that quickly before we end.
I think that's super important. I also have heard it for years the other way, that the bottom actually holds all the power because the bottom can say pour it out, the bottom can say no, the bottom chooses what they're doing or what they're saying, you know, opting in or opting out of. And I think for years, I thought that was true, that the bottom held all the power until I started playing as a top with people who didn't want all the power, who wanted to play with not having all the power, who wanted to play with, I don't want the ability to save for it. What does that mean? What does that look like? And we'll get into that deeper in other podcasts. I think what I believe now is that there is a shared power dynamic. I think what's true is the top holds a greater amount of responsibility. And I think we don't maybe talk about, we meaning the community, talk about responsibility enough. Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
Yeah, I would agree with that, because in the moment, if the top is doing their job right, the bottom is hopefully going into subspace or not having to make decisions in that moment so much if, you know, everything's going mm-hmm. according to plan. But as a top, you would always hope that the bottom could verbalize or put a stop to with a hand signal or something that would let you know that things need to stop if it was getting out of bounds for them that day, mm-hmm. even if it was everything that they had said. I mean, you can do everything right as a top and still have the bottom at any point say, this is not working for me. And that's right. Got to be okay. It just has to be okay. Mm-hmm. But as a top, that was one of the first things that I learned, that curating this space, holding these boundaries for this scene that we're going to have, it's my job to do it perfectly for the person who has described it to me and asked for all of these things. And that person is in the bottom. And so, yes, they have the power. Yes, I have the power. Like, you're both doing this very intimate dance of holding space for each other to have this beautiful experience.
And no one's perfect. I heard that when you said that a moment ago, that you felt like
do it perfectly
for this other person, and perfect doesn't exist. I think that that's something that I would tell anybody that's new to kink, anybody that's done kink for any length of time is going to know. What is perfection? What is actually the definition of perfection? What does that look like? You have to come into kink with a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I think you just do. I love when people play with humor in kink, but to understand that some of these things you can't predict. Maybe you're trying a new toy. Maybe you're trying a new method. Maybe it's the same thing you've done 50 times before, and it's a different day that day for you emotionally. There are so many things that are unpredictable. I think that's one of the things I love about it, is you never have the same scene twice, mm-hmm. no matter what you're doing.
That's true.
It's never the same scene twice. And so there is no perfect. There's only, for me, responsible, well-communicated, fun, and healing.
I love that. That's beautiful. And let me see if I can get this right. As a double Capricorn, Cancer, Moon, Rising.
Is that true?
Yeah.
We just had our natal charts done. Not me, somebody that was into that myself, but is that, you've memorized it well.
I think that that's true. Kelly, you'll have to tell me if that's true, but as that individual, it's very important to me to try to get it right. Like, I want to be perfect at it, which includes the nurturing side and the playful side, you know, to get healing.
I think having the switch experience that I do, I can't expect that perfection. I think I love the human part of people so much, the vulnerability in the top space, that I think even when I'm bottoming, I'm still holding space. Mm-hmm. Still holding space for the person in the top to have their own moment, to not be perfect.
You know what is springing up for me, actually? I think it's around, it's my strength. Like you just mentioned holding space for the person on the top, which would be me in that scenario.
Right.
And I want to do it perfectly. And I want my body to say, stay strong. And my chronic health issues sometimes preclude that. Like I'll have planned to do something a certain way or a certain number of times and my arm muscle will literally give out. And so I'll be like, so this is probably a way that I internally punish myself, that I could be kinder.
You're topping yourself right now.
Oh my God.
But I think that that's a really good example. So if we ran with that on the bottom, there are people certainly who could come in with all kinds of expectations of you as a top. And this could happen to anybody. They could injure themselves. There's a number of things that could happen. They could just, something could happen strangely that, you know, causes a nerve twitch or whatever. And they don't, you know, they can't play in that way for a few moments. But on, I think it's a good bottom. You make room for that. There are all kinds of ways to dominate somebody and they don't have to include an implement at all. They don't have to include a certain movement at all. And so to allow somebody to flex and move and be, again, a little more human in it is to be a really good player, in my opinion.
And you are so good at that, my love. Well, I think that about wraps it up for today, for what we wanted to accomplish for this intro. I hope it was informative and interesting.
I look forward to the next one.
Thank you for joining me. I love you.
I love you.
Bye.